Good morning, Merry Christmas. Well, while the day of giving and receiving gifts has passed, we continue to give thanks and celebrate Christmas and the God's gift to us of his only begotten Son. As a father and grandfather, I really enjoy the celebration of the Holy Family, which allows us to look at how this God incarnate, this Christ child, this God among us, has a direct connection to our daily life and to our family. For it's a time when we are invited to bring the creche of Christ and the love of the Holy Family into each of our homes. At times, I think we live in a society where all too often we can easily fall prey to the notion of separating the secular and the sacred. What I mean by this is that we have the capacity to separate what we do when we come to Mass each Sunday versus what we do the rest of the week, when they really are and should be one and the same. For it's all too easy for us to close our eyes to what is sacramental. This term sacramental refers to something that points us to God. Looking at the big picture, theologian Monsignor Kevin Irwin defines the entire world as being sacramental, for it is the locus, the place where the incarnate God is experienced. More particular to the present, obviously our liturgical celebration this morning is sacramental, for it's an act of we, the church, the body of Christ, and it's one that points us to God. Liturgy is a time when we all gather and come together around this table, either in person or virtually. It's a time where we have the opportunity to open ourselves up in order to partake of God's ever-present saving grace and unconditional love. And it's a time that we're all sent forth to do God's work. It's author and theologian Rosemary Houghton who writes that liturgy is formation for transformation. And for this transformation to take place within ourselves and for others, it just can't be limited to 1 hour a week. For if we stop here each weekend and then simply rejoin the world that focuses on quid pro quo and who is in and who is out and engaging in one win-lose scenario after another, then we've missed the reason we gather together each week. For it's necessary to take the unearned gifts and graces from this table and bring it back to each of our homes and into the fabric of our lives. Remember where church began. Up to the beginning of the 4th century, church was located right at home. Residers of the prayer would have been the elders of the home. And what we heard in the second reading is Paul's exhortation on how family should live and pray together, bearing with one another, forgiving one another, and above all things, to put on love. The family table that they dined on to nourish their bodies was the same table they used for liturgy. There was an obvious connection between the family's prayer life and the family's way of life. But once Christianity quickly rose to become the dominant religion in the Roman Empire, church was pulled from the homes, placed in larger public gathering spaces owned by the government called basilicas. But within a short time, St. John Chrysostom saw the shift that was taking place and repeatedly urged all Christians to make each home a family church. In doing so, sanctify the family unit. 1700 later, we're still being called to make our home and our daily lives a family church. We're still being called to bring Christ, the incarnate God, into our families. We are still being called to connect this table, this altar, with the tables in each of our homes. Author John McCarthy, in his recent article, wrote about teaching his young daughter the importance of connections and family table with an invitation to Mr. Rogers. Here's the story. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood had a beautiful simplicity marked by a wonderment at the world, a curiosity about things taken for granted, and stories of people working through their problems. Fred Rogers embodied a spirit of unconditional care and acceptance, fervent faith in children, and a calming gentleness that communicated safety. His present focused manner was the antithesis of the stressful, multitasking world of parenthood that I had come to know so well. He became a central figure in my emerging fatherhood. My daughter and I sang his songs during our morning strolls and played in the local Children's Museum of Pittsburgh section dedicated to his program. His neighborhood was mesmerizing to my daughter and me. So around my daughter's second birthday, I had a Mr. Rogers-inspired idea. Why not invite one key person in my daughter's world to dinner each month? The local children's librarian could visit one evening, and perhaps the borough mayor could drop by a few weeks later. But I wanted to start at the top. Let's invite Mr. Rogers himself, I said to my wife. After all, he lives just a few neighborhoods away. I bet he'll come. She looked at me if I wanted to invite the Pope. You really think Mr. Rogers would come to our house for dinner? Fat chance. Undeterred, I sent a letter to Mr. Rogers that fall, telling him of our delight in his show and my idea of inviting neighborhood people over to talk about their lives, and asking him and Mrs. Rogers to be our inaugural guest. 3 months later, there was no reply. But soon we learned that Mr. Rogers had passed away. I was unaware of his illness and now understood why our invitation had gone unanswered. I took my daughter to the Children's Museum about a week later, and we spent time in his presence, playing on the trolley and singing along with his songs. No, Mr. Rogers would not be coming to our family table after all. Yet even after his passing, Mr. Rogers gave us a far greater gift than I could ever have imagined. See, upon arriving home from the museum that afternoon, I was stunned to find a letter in our mailbox from Mr. Rogers. The accompanying note from his producer indicated it was among the letters written in his early stages of illness. The one-page type letter was akin to something from an old friend, personal, gracious, and caring. He apologized for not responding sooner and told us that he was honored by the invitation before saying that he couldn't attend. The letter, his heartwarming gesture 17 years ago, means all the more to me during this pandemic, time of despair, distress, and isolation for many in our neighborhoods. His note inspires me to be a better neighbor, to make it more of a point to greet people by name, to recognize birthdays, and offer random acts of kindness to unknown others in my communities. His parting gift motivates me to teach my daughters the importance of neighbors in the world. I hope that they become ambassadors of Mr. Rogers' spirit as they navigate young adulthood, finding avenues that lift other spirits, even if seemingly small ways. Yes, Mr. Rogers never came to our table to dine with us, but in the end, he shared much more enduring gifts with me, believing in others, hoping for the future, seeing true dignity in all humankind, and knowing that when least expected, sometimes the best presents in life come from a special neighbor. So once we're able to freely and safely reconnect in person, who should be invited to your table? In the meantime, what neighbor would be blessed with a call or a note from you? How do we as a community of believers share the blessings from this table onto others? And how can we help others see God in themselves? Thus, on these days following Christmas, we still shout Emmanuel, God is indeed with us. So come, take those steps necessary to connect your sacred life to your secular life. And bring the love of the incarnate God and the blessings of this table, this altar, back to your table, back to your family, back to your neighbor, and make them a mainstay of your everyday lives.